Hello and welcome to the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. Today's show is a selection of the Chiefs and NFL-related segments that I did today on Sports Radio 810 WHB. If you want to listen to the whole show, you can always tune in live 9 to noon Sunday mornings on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And you can go to the website, 810WHB.com, for the podcast of the whole show if you want to hear about Big 12 basketball, as well as all of your Chiefs talk to get you through. On today's show, we talk a lot about what the Chiefs are going to do in the draft at the quarterback position. I know it's a little bit of a dead horse that we've been beating, but I think what the Chiefs can do this year is very interesting, very valuable, and will set up the Chiefs for years to come, for better or for worse, so it's obviously important they get it right. But the Chiefs have shown a few cards in their hand so far through the combine, and I think we've got to pay a little bit of attention to what exactly they have been doing, because I think it's going to show us a little bit of where they might end up going. Also, a breakdown, of course, the big contracts for Laurent Duvernay-Tardif and Eric Berry. A little bit of talk about Dontari Poehler, not a whole lot. And we look at a little bit of something interesting that's been going on, or at least a conversation that's been going on, about trading some big quarterback names outside of Kansas City, but some names that we've talked a lot about in the city. All that and much more coming up on Roughing the Kicker, but first I want to say thank you to the Patreon supporters of this show. You can support the show at patreon.com/RTK, the $20 group, people giving $20 a month to help keep this show up and going. Randy Singh, at Randy_Singh_, Ray Hines, at Big Turf Guy, Derek Vaughn, at D_Vaughn88, and Andy Simpson. $10 group is Christine Roadlander, at C Roadlander. The $5 group is Josh Beadle and Ty Declare, at Ty Declare 44. If you have any questions you'd like to hear on the next episode of the podcast or on Sports Radio 810 WHB next Sunday morning, you can tweet me at JB Briscoe. I'll either get back to you on Twitter or save it for the show. If you have any feedback, any thoughts, any questions, any comments, literally anything at all that you'd like to give, I will happily take it at JB Briscoe. Again, you can listen to the podcast of the full show on Sports Radio 810 WHB's website, 810WHB.com. Now, let's get into the show.
Yeah, we're skipping church too. This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Josh Briscoe. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe if you want more of this wonderful work that I do. Charlie Carlin, the other side of the glass. A tweet just came across my timeline from Evan Silva saying, I think there's a better than even chance Joe Mixon tests out as the top running back athlete out of this class at his pro day. My number one RB in the field.
How do you feel about the combine?
I used to care about it a whole lot more than I do currently. Now I read tweets about it and go, yes, those people know more about football than I do. I'll trust their opinion.
Right. It's cool that someone broke the 40.
Yeah, that was fun. But if you watch it and you watch like 4-2-2, his 40 insane. And then like a 4-5, you're like, oh, those guys are all fast. I want to talk about Joe Mixon, though. He makes all the sense in the world for the Chiefs as a scheme fit. He makes all the sense in the world for the Chiefs if he ends up being a value falling to like the third round. You can get your like unquestioned running back of the future in the third round, a guy who would fit so well in Andy Reid's system. A guy who could give you everything you need from that position. But he punched a woman in the face. I'm pulling a video up again right now on my computer as we talk about Joe Mixon, just so we have like the appropriate context all around here. And he ended up getting suspended for an entire season for this, right? Am I making that up? He missed an entire season with Oklahoma. This happened before Tyreek Hill's incident, chronologically. This was in 2014. This is going to get explained away by the first team who really needs running back help. The Chiefs made it work with Tyreek Hill, and Tyreek Hill's quote-unquote issue, his off-the-field problem, was worse from what it's been described. There's no video of it, though. Video is great for outrage. And not that there shouldn't be outrage. There obviously should be. But the Chiefs decided Tyreek Hill was worth it. I think you've got to think that Joe Mixon would be worth it in a vacuum. But for the Chiefs, how do they do this again? Or do you say, actually, this is easy for the Chiefs. They've done it once. They've proved to themselves and to everyone else. They can take a troubled dude and make it work. Tyreek Hill's been not only on, I mean, he's been fantastic on the field and he's been silent off of it. That's what the Chiefs could have asked for. What about Joe Mixon? I tweeted this out at JB Briscoe a couple days ago asking this question, and I got like a perfectly even split response. One guy tweeted me and said, I think it makes it easier. Tyreek Hill being here already. I think it makes it easier. The environment has proven to be able to guide guys through this time in their lives. Alternatively, I think it precludes Mixon. Chiefs took a ton of heat for Hill. It's died down, but there's no way they'd do that in back-to-back years. And I find myself saying both of those things, giving both of those answers. Because, first of all, the Chiefs absolutely could say, listen, we made this work with Tyreek Hill. Everything's been good. Joe Mixon's been good. They can talk to him for 15 minutes and say, we vetted him very deeply. We've given him the most vetting. We are totally confident that Joe Mixon will not punch any more women. But then it brings everything with Tyreek Hill back up again. And now it's not just a one-time thing, a one-time excuse for a really top talent. Now it's a trend. Now 2 years in a row, the Chiefs have taken really talented domestic abusers. Even though, again, Joe Mixon, the video for the Joe Mixon video is really ugly. But if we had Tyreek Hill video, he would not be playing in the NFL. I can't imagine seeing that video and then having anybody be able to deal with that PR mess. That totally justified PR mess, for the record. If we had a video of Michael Vick killing a dog with his bare hands, Michael Vick's return would not have happened. We're obsessed with video. We're obsessed with being able to see it. Hearing it doesn't mean that much. Hearing it in someone else's words, reading from a court document, just isn't that powerful. And I still don't know exactly where I land on the Joe Mixon thing. Because, man, I go back and forth. Because you can say, hey, listen, Andy Reid knows how to deal with these guys. The Chiefs are a safe place for this kind of thing. The Chiefs have proven themselves to be able to handle this off-the-field problem and get the best out of the talent. And man, the talent would be great for this Chiefs team. It's explosiveness in the backfield they just don't have and that they need so desperately. A bunch of people talking about Christian McCaffrey in the first round. I don't care for that, although apparently he had almost identical numbers to LeSean McCoy in the combine, which is funny. Because there's at least one visual difference that makes me this is my fault. Like I look at Christian McCaffrey and at first I was like, oh, he's like a skinnier Mike Allstott. Wait, why would I say that? Oh, he reminds me of Toby Gerhardt the way he runs. Charlie, I need another white running back stat. Toby Gerhardt, Mike Allstott. I need a third one. We got to compare Christian McCaffrey to white only white guys. Is there a third white running back?
I don't think there is.
Oh, dang it. Oh, Peyton Hillis. There we go.
Hey, there we go.
He is nothing like any of those guys. His numbers compared to LeSean McCoy, not Peyton Hillis or Toby Gerhardt or Mike Allstott. But I just can't, for some reason, I can't stop associating them. The way we do that, also in the combine, that's another thing about the combine that is just, like, infuriating to me. Not infuriating, just ridiculous. We've got high motor guys. We got high football IQs. We've got raw athletes. Just watch closely next time those are getting thrown around and see how you can categorize those.
You're going to see some trends, I
promise. If the Chiefs are going to get Joe Mixon, do you think it's going to have to be in the first round?
No.
I don't think I was going to say.
No.
Okay.
No, that's the one thing that would really, that would solve this problem for the Chiefs, if Joe Mixon goes, like, just before them in the third. I think if they get him with their actual, with a compensatory pick or their actual slotted pick in the third round, either of those two third round picks, you do it in a heartbeat. Just in a heartbeat. Talent-wise. And I think the Chiefs have shown, I think having drafted Tyreek Hill makes it more likely that the Chiefs do take Joe Mixon, because we've seen now that they're willing to. They're willing to deal with the mess for the sake of the talent. And also, I think at this point, the fans are going to be predominantly on their side. I think we're going to see more people saying, you know what? It worked last time. I trust them as an organization. It just worked with Tyreek Hill. We got to have a running back. We got to be able to run the ball. And then, it's just like with Tyreek Hill. First time Joe Mixon fumbles it on the goal line. Oh, that woman beater. The Chiefs are a decrepit organization for bringing him in. Whenever he records his sixth rushing touchdown of his rookie season in week 8, it's, oh, yes! That domestic abuse was in his past! Yes, John Dorsey, yes! The past is in the past! The future is Joe Mixon! That's just how we do it! It's how we always do it in sports. It's how Chiefs fans did it with Tyreek Hill. It's how I said they're going to do it with Tyreek. That was the most predictable possible thing. If Joe Mixon would have been Frankie Hammond Jr. I'm sorry, if Tyreek Hill would have been Frankie Hammond Jr. as a punt returner, we all would have been like, oh, he beat and strangled his pregnant girlfriend, and now he fumbles the ball. Get him out of here. But he's pew, touchdown, pew, touchdown. Tyreek. Joe Mixon will be the exact same thing for whichever team he ends up going on. If he ends up being good, it's a PR win for the team. If he's bad, nightmare. That's how it is. I'm not defending that model. I think it's kind of icky. I think you need to either decide, hey, do I care about this issue or do I not? We probably shouldn't be basing it on their on-the-field performance. But it's a business, and you care about the team more than you care about that woman. And that's 100, that's just true. You care about the Chiefs more than you care about Tyreek Hill's fiance or whatever, girlfriend. The football team's a big part of your life. She's not. That's what you're doing there, right? Like, if that was your, like, sister, or your wife or girlfriend or whatever, you would be beside yourself. Like, how could they draft Tyreek Hill or Joe Mixon? He punched my wife in the face. I could never, that's my wife. Not your wife, not your problem. It's uncomfortable, but it's how it is. And I think the Chiefs are a perfect fit for Joe Mixon. And I think they know that. I think you have to do the math of the value. I think you have to say, where in the draft is it worth it? But if he is the best running back on the board, I think those problems go away. I do want to talk about quarterbacks here at some point, but that Joe Mixon thing just popped up and reminded me about how I think that conversation is still very interesting. I think we still have to be willing to zoom out a little bit and look at how we make those moral judgments, figure out what it is exactly that we want, what we will have outrage about, what we won't. I mean, I'm not telling you that you should or shouldn't. I'm just telling you I think that's how we're doing it right now, and I think the Chiefs should probably draft Joe Mixon if he's there, like in the third round. Got to get a quarterback in the first round, though. Regardless of his past. Let's go to the phones. JT, you're on Sports Sunday. What's up?
Hey, guys. Just listening to your commentary over the last hour or so. First of all, I would want to say that Joe Mixon, I believe, is untouchable. And I don't think it is because of the flack they'll take in the media immediately. I think it's because of the chance of the locker room going south down the road. I kind of always view an NFL team like an expedition into uncharted areas.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have good leadership. You've got to have a locker room that follows that leadership. And then you got to have some great talent as well But if that talent is such a prima donna or such a problem child that it undoes the ability of the leadership to work, then it'll destroy the team. And I think Andy Reid understands that, and I think that's why he will take on one or two, maybe three problem children, but he's not going beyond that.
Well, I think right now I'm trying to think if there's more than one. Now, you could say that Marcus Peters has some prima donna in him, but it's not the kind of prima donna that comes with assault. But Tyreek Hill, I don't get the feeling – two things. One thing that I kind of think that you hit the nail on the head, and one thing kind of off the side. I don't think Tyreek Hill seems to be in any sort of leadership role. Like, I don't think that he's been thrust into that even though he's a talent.
No. That's not my point. My point is that if you get too many people that are going to buck against the leadership or are going to put themselves ahead of the team, then at some point the rest of the team starts to – follow them and not follow the other leaders in the locker room.
Right, and the second half of what I was going to say is Tyreek Hill, for every quote we've seen him put into the media, has been very – his language has been very team-oriented. He's been
a little more patient than just 1 year, though.
Sure.
I think you're about right on those guys. If those guys get to their second contract and they're doing that, then I think that's great. But I believe you got two of them that you got to watch very closely. They're huge talents. I mean, they're amazing talents. But they haven't proven it year in and year out yet. So I don't think you can take on a guy, especially not somebody, and this gets back to actually the press piece, but especially not somebody that's so close to exactly what happened with Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, I think that, and JT, thank you for your call. I think that's a fair bit of math to do. And if you want to even expand that a little bit to like Travis Kelce, a guy who you don't have total faith in keeping it totally staying totally composed on the field, you can start to get a little bit worried about how that pans out. I don't know Joe Mixon well enough to know if he is kind of a prima donna. That's something that I need to figure out better. Or if there's like an Oklahoma fan listening, you feel like an expert on if Joe Mixon would be a locker room problem. I think that's interesting because I do think you have to preserve that sort of environment. And also, the Chiefs are about to lose at least one of their actual front-of-the-line leaders. Alex Smith's not going to be here a calendar year from today. Eric Berry will be. Justin Houston's going to be. If he's on the field or not, he's under contract for like two more years that you can't get out of. But then we'll talk about Eric Berry and the Ron DeVernay Tardif a little bit later also. I think Eric Berry's purpose, outside of what he's literally paid to do, I think he is going to help and has helped sort of keep Marcus Peters in that zone that keeps him from getting to being a place of some sort of problem child. I think we've seen Marcus Peters grow. I'm not worried about Tyreek Hill yet, because one, I think he realizes that he's got to be as deferential as possible, as humble as possible. Because you can't have that history and a bad attitude now. Unless you're really good, and then maybe you can. But I think JT is right on a bunch of points there. But again, you really need a running back, and he's still sitting there in the third round. I think Andy Reid starts to lean over and say, hey, Dorse, I think we can handle it. I think we can bring in one more. We can make it work. Make the media forget about it. Keep the locker room in check. I can do it. Because you've got to have that explosiveness out of the backfield. The quarterback situation is really interesting right now in a way that I am very happy about. I still don't understand why some of you really like hate the Romo idea, but we're not talking Romo today. No Romo. No Romo today. Just rookies. Because the Chiefs have scheduled, or have already had, formal interviews with Deshaun Watson, with Deshaun Kizer, Mitchell, no longer Mitch, Trubisky, Pat Mahomes, Brad Kaya, Nathan Peterman. Each team only gets 60 interviews at the combine. So I think you can draw a little bit out of how teams choose to spend those. For whatever it's worth, like, the Chiefs didn't have a formal interview with Travis Kelce. Because that clip we played a couple of weeks ago. Andy Reid, it was when Colin Cowherd was talking to Travis Kelce, and Kelce said he talked to Reid informally at a Senior Bowl or something like that. And then whenever he called him, he was like, hey, don't bleep this up. That was the extent of Andy Reid talking to Travis Kelce. But a quarterback is so different. You've got to talk to your quarterback. And now listen, some people say, you should have talked to Travis Kelce also. That guy's crazy. I love Travis Kelce. But the Chiefs are not only admitting to themselves, they're admitting to everyone else. They are very purposefully, seriously looking at the next quarterback. And also, they're laying every piece of foundation to build the rest of the season on where Alex Smith is our starter. Alex Smith is our starter. Alex is the guy. It's going to be Alex. Get off my back. Alex Smith is starting. And we're going to hear that in all likelihood for 17 weeks this season. We're going to hear it through training camp. We're going to hear it through the season. We're going to hear it through the first round of the playoffs. And then we're not going to hear it anymore because the season's going to be over. But as we get closer to the draft now and farther from Tony Romo, I am more and more convinced that this is actually the year where the Chiefs draft a quarterback in one of the first two rounds. Because they have to. And we've known this. We've known this for a while. We've said the Chiefs should be drafting a quarterback for years now. But this year is the last chance. Because if you wait, then you're either paying Alex Smith like $20 million to be average next season, or you're starting a rookie. Right now, the Chiefs just have to find the guys they like, get the best values, and then just throw themselves into it and say, well, better hope we get this one right. My theory I talked about last week is you can really increase your chances of getting the right guy by just drafting two of them. Because at this point, all of these guys are going to have flaws. There were some analysts on Twitter yesterday talking about the combine and saying, oh, this guy's got happy feet still. This guy's arm isn't quite there. Have some questions about him off the field. Have some questions about this guy's mechanics. Everybody's going to have different types and relatively similarly sized flaws outside of the first, 15 picks. So either you say, ooh, maybe the Chiefs think Deshaun Watson has by far the fewest flaws. Move up and go get him, sell out, make that your guy. That's fine. Maybe they think that Pat Mahomes' feet problem, his happy feet, is fixable, and they want to wait until the end of the first to take him. And then they say in the third round, oh, you know what, Brad Kaya was behind the terrible offensive line last year in Miami. But I think he's got something that we could really draw out of him. Does any Chiefs fan in the radius of this station's signal have a problem with the idea of the Chiefs taking a quarterback in the first and third rounds? Could you be furious about that? Because even the Chiefs have two third-round picks. Take a guy at 27. Take a defensive tackle with your second-round pick. Take yourself an inside linebacker with your third-round pick. And with your third-round compensatory pick, you got Sean Smith. Take Brad Kaya. Or whatever. Or take Chad Kelly in the fifth. I don't care! I don't care who the names are, because that's not my job. I know that I cannot analyze quarterbacks as well as Andy Reid does. I can admit my deficiencies. I am not as good as Andy Reid is at analyzing quarterbacks, although I question that sometimes whenever I watch Alex Smith play football. At least college quarterbacks. And I don't know how Andy wants to mold these guys. But if Reid looks at this lineup of quarterbacks and says, you know what? This guy's got an edge here. This guy's got an edge here. You send Tyler Bray off with a nice severance package. You say goodbye to Nick Foles forever. And you go into this season and you say, all right, Brad Kaya is our backup because he's more pro-ready right now. Pat Mahomes is our future, and we're just going to work on his mechanics for a year. Matt Nagy is going to bunk in bunk beds with Patrick Mahomes for the next 365 days. And then he has the franchise. Then it's the Pat Mahomes show. And if Pat Mahomes is no good, then you go, well, let's see what Brad Kaya can do. We've been working with Brad Kaya for a year. Oh, he's looking like Russell Wilson. What a late round value. Oh, Dak Prescott, hello there. It just seems so obvious to me. So it's never going to happen for some reason or another. But I shouldn't let my cynical history as a Chiefs fan corrupt what I actually think will happen now. Because everything we've seen from the Chiefs, everything we've seen so far through this process has been the Chiefs saying to the world, yes, we're finally going to go quarterback. It might not be in the first round. Maybe in there in the first round, they say, oh, wow, this defensive tackle has fallen far too far. He'll replace Dontari Poe for the next 5 years, and then we're going to draft a guy in the second and again in the third, and one of them is going to take over the franchise, and the other one's going to be the backup for the next 5 years. Unless the first guy's no good, and then the second guy's going to be the head of the franchise for the next 5 years. Washington did it with RG3 and Kirk Cousins, and it worked. RG3 won Rookie of the Year, then got hurt. Then Kirk Cousins stepped up, and now he's about to get paid $500 billion to be a mediocre, above average, to be an above-average quarterback. To be a non-elite quarterback. That worked out for Washington. That's the place in the NFL where I want it to be a copycat league. I want the Chiefs to just go, oh, well, it worked for Washington. Except for the Chiefs don't have to mortgage their future to trade up to number two overall. Just sit there and wait. Get the best guy at 27 and get the guy on the third round that you like. Also, for what it's worth, Daniel Jeremiah on Twitter yesterday said the most impressive quarterbacks from yesterday were Deshaun Watson, Trubisky, Mahomes, and Kaiser. He said he also heard good things about the... I'm just going to rewind the show. Whoop. Sometimes I talk so fast that I haven't fully formed the thoughts. And I think that's not a problem that most people deal with. It is an affliction that I am cursed by. Reset, and this is a podcast, right? This isn't, we're not live yet? Good. We're still in the break? Okay. There are also good things on Twitter about the aforementioned Kaya and Nathan Peterman out of Pittsburgh. All guys the Chiefs have shown interest in. Literally all of the top quarterbacks the Chiefs have scheduled interviews with or have already done interviews with. And all of the guys know who Andy Reid is, by the way. Everybody knows, all these young quarterbacks know that Andy Reid is a good coach to be under if you're a young quarterback trying to make it in the NFL. This isn't Cleveland, where quarterbacks go to die and be forgotten forever. R.I.P. Kevin Hogan. The Chiefs are going to draft a quarterback. I would say they should draft two. Now, the only question is, when is that going to happen? Coming up next, I'm going to call Andy Reid's personal cell phone, and he's going to tell us the answer to that question. This is Sports Sunday.
How would you guys describe Gronk?
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
Everybody should be happy except for Sarin. Right. Sarin should be petrified because there's something coming.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Oh, man. Welcome back to Sports Sunday. That liner makes it sound like I am threatening Sarin Petro. I know Sarin's not listening, but if he was, and he turned it off before I could explain it, we need to find the new host for this show. I'm not going to give the context, because it's funnier without it, but it just sounds like I'm straight up threatening Sarin. Like, everybody should be happy except for Sarin. He's got something coming for him. Mahaha.
Speaking of your haircut, he would always be the one that would compliment your hairstyle on the air during Chiefs pregame show.
My blonde locks.
Yes.
My golden rays. They're gone now. My hair's just brown. I like to think, though, that Sarin would always approve of whatever my hair would be. You know? I just felt like going a... not even a more professional. I'm just going a more vertical way right now. I got really freaking sick of having super long hair. Super long is like I could have done like a top knot that was that length, but I never did that in public because I respect myself. That's not true. I don't respect myself. You hear Charlie laugh through the glass, but not in the microphone, because don't let the world know that you're laughing at my joke, Charlie. Keep that bleep to yourself. Therese Paylor says, Deshaun Watson killed it during combine throwing drills yesterday. All right, fine. Trade up and get him. That's what I needed. It's 10:30, and we have not talked about Eric Berry or Laurent Duvernay-Tardif yet. Let's do that now. That was big news twice, and it's a little bit older news now because it's Sunday, and that happened earlier in the week. But the Eric Berry contract was not surprising. The LDT win was. And I got very distracted just now, Charlie, because I have TweetDeck open besides my notes here on my laptop. And a Kansas City Star article about the world's first smart condom just popped up. And the headline says, company says it's quote-unquote smart condom can track sexual performance and detect STDs.
Sports Sunday science segment.
I was going to ask you, actually, if you had science coming up.
That was it. Right there.
I don't know if I want to know more about this or not. And I know you don't want me to read about it more on the air right now. The article starts with, ha, you thought your Fitbit was so smart. Welcome to the future.
What a start to an article.
Welcome to the future of wearable technology in the bedroom, manufacturer British Condom says, and it's come on.
Yeah, you don't need to read it anymore.
It's just, it's on the Star. This is clean. $75. It's not actually, it's just a ring, it says. It's a ring that slides over your normal condom. I'm sorry, this is fascinating. We're going to move on now.
You're so distracted.
I'm sorry. Some of these things I can't read. I was wrong to think that I could just read this whole thing. I wasn't going to, but I can't now. It said to provide 6 to 8 hours of something the manufacturer calls live usage. Eric Berry could afford that if he wanted it. He's got so much money now.
Great segue.
The Chiefs just gave Laurent Duvernay-Tardif a 5-year, $42 million contract with $20 million guaranteed. Are you sure you don't want me to go back and read more about the future of smart technology in the bedroom? Fine. The Chiefs just did something that actually isn't that surprising for what we've seen the Chiefs do as far as paying offensive linemen. They just did this exact thing with Eric Fisher. They're paying a guy for what the Chiefs hope he'll become, not what he's done so far. And now with Eric Fisher, I felt like since he moved to left tackle, Eric Fisher had been on a steady incline. So paying him at a number below your elite left tackles, but about par with your average left tackles, above average left tackles, and then hoping that he goes above average, that was all fine. Because even if he's just an above average left tackle, they're paying him roughly that kind of money. It's an expensive position. That contract was fine. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif now is like, I think he's like the third highest paid right guard in football or something. And I haven't seen it from him. Last year, there was a Pro Football Focus stat sheet that I thought was fascinating. More than halfway through the season, almost to the end of the year, but not after the season totally. But towards the end of the season, there was a stat sheet that had yards before contact for running the ball to the left side or the right side of the offensive line. And the Chiefs were very near the top of the league at running the ball to the left without the running back getting touched. So Ware or West would run left and not get touched for at a rate better than almost the entire league. To the right side, the Chiefs were in the bottom like three. Guys were getting hit immediately when they ran to the right side, which making me question LDT's run blocking and Mitchell Schwartz's run blocking. Both of them seem to do well in pass blocking situations. But the running game last year was not good, and that blame has to be shared by the offensive line and the running backs. So this was a little bit of a confusing extension for me. And now, though, tell me if this is a positive or a negative for you. As a concept, this is great. The Chiefs have locked down their offensive line for like 5 years. That continuity is something you would generally write down as a positive. But it's Fisher, Anger, Morse, LDT, and Schwartz. That's not exactly the caliber of offensive line that I want to pay a ton of money to for the next 5 years. But the Chiefs obviously think that it's trending upwards. Mitch Morse is the guy that I would have thought was going to get the next contract. I know he's got a little bit more time than LDT does on his deal still. But Morse is eventually probably going to demand some payment. Anger is young enough to where it probably won't be a problem. But you've got your guys. Those are your five guys. And if this helps you at all, you can now think with confidence the Chiefs will not be drafting a guard in the first two rounds this year. Probably the first three or even four. But one little thing that I think is underrated so far is I think we might be seeing the end of Zach Fulton in Kansas City. I really like Zach Fulton. He started basically all of last season and performed very well at that left guard spot where the left side of the offensive line was very good. But he's making $1.8 million this year, and he could be cut with $26,000 in dead cap money, virtually no dead cap money, to save $1.8 million if the Chiefs get into a cap pinch. That's three times more than he made last year. Last year, he made $630,000. Now, you could say, well, that versatility is worth $1.8 million. He's your backup left guard, right guard, and center. And I think he is starter caliber. Once he does need to get another contract, he's going to go somewhere else in the NFL, start at left guard, and be good. The Broncos are going to pay him, and he's going to be good at left guard for the Broncos in a year. But that's something to keep an eye on. That's a cut that I think the Chiefs will try to do as late as possible if they're going to do it, because they don't want to have to make that move unless they really need about $2 million in cap space, because he is still very valuable to this team. You don't expect your two guards and your center to all be healthy every game for an entire season. That never happens. And to plug in Zach Fulton at those spots is very valuable. I've liked Zach Fulton since they drafted him. I'm wrong about almost everything. But being like, you know what, I think Zach Fulton could be the starter this year as a sixth-round draft pick was one of the things I've been the most right about ever. Don't ask me what I thought about like drafting John Baldwin, though, please. I don't want to talk about it. Just a name to keep. If that happens, you'll know why. I hope he is on this roster still because, again, I think he's going to start four. Somebody's going to start four games next year who's not any of those guys, maybe more. So the Chiefs are obviously now betting on this young offensive line growing. They're betting on the growth. But the run blocking last year was not good. That scares me. Young guys don't always grow. That scares me. You're giving guaranteed money out. That scares me. You can't get that wrong. But that's an instance of paying a guy for what you expect him, what you hope for him to be. Eric Berry got 6 years, $78 million, $40 million guaranteed. He's getting paid for what he just showed. He's getting paid for what he's been. So, how do you want to do it? I'm guessing basically all of you are happier about the Eric Berry contract than the LDT one, right? You probably should be. Eric Berry is a better player, and he's a more important player. He's the face of the franchise right now in a lot of ways. I'm not saying don't be excited about the Eric Berry contract, but realize that those two deals are being done in very different ways. And the Chiefs waited too long on Justin Houston and on Eric Berry. I would have done it also on Eric Berry. I didn't want to give him a long-term deal before last season because we hadn't seen him be fully back. I didn't know what he fully was. Neither did the Chiefs. That's why they franchise tagged him and said, "What are you? Let's show us. Show us and we'll pay you." The problem is that he showed everybody. Everybody saw what Eric Berry was. So the Chiefs had to give him $78 million over 6 years for $40 million guaranteed. And just how that works. But I thought the deal, I always thought the deal this year would get done. I thought it should get done. I think they needed to give him this. No quarrels there. But he's getting paid for this last season, and the Chiefs are hoping that he continues to be that. And if you talk about the Chiefs and their big contracts, I think it'll make you a little bit uncomfortable because they've had some good deals and they've had some bad ones, which you could say that's true for most franchises, and you're probably right. But I just think the way the Chiefs are built right now and the way that John Dorsey has chosen to spend the Chiefs' money is really interesting. Because here's some, just using players currently on the roster, Dorsey's had some big hits and some big misses. Getting Alan Bailey for 4 years and $25 million, a steal. Jay Howard for 2 years, $10 million, a steal. Travis Kelce for 5 years, $47 million. That seems like a great deal, but his cap number jumps from $3 million last year to $5.5 million this year to $10 million next year. But still, no real gripes there. Ron Parker might have been the best deal that John Dorsey has done. 5 years for $25 million is a robbery. But what about these? Tom Bahali's deal, 3 years, $21 million. Total disaster. He's burning up $8.5 million in cap space this year. He couldn't get on the field at the end of last season. You could defend Alex Smith's four-year, $68 million deal because that's the quarterback market, but it doesn't look very good right now. But that's defensible. I would probably try to defend that if I was made to take a side. Same for Jeremy Maclin. I like the five-year, $55 million deal at the time. I still think it's the right thing for the Chiefs. I think they still need that number one receiver guy that you can trust on the outside. But he hasn't produced that value yet. I mean, that's totally inarguable. And you don't usually see wide receivers start to hit their stride going into their ninth season. So consider me concerned about Jeremy Maclin. Although when we had Seth Kaiser on a couple of weeks ago, he broke down why we got to stop worrying about Jeremy Maclin. And I'm using that to give me hope right now. And I'm fine with Eric Fisher's four-year, $48 million deal like I talked about earlier, but he's got to keep growing to justify it. That grade is incomplete. What about Justin Houston's deal? $101 million for 6 years, $52.5 million of it guaranteed. That's the real number that matters. But if you cut out the last 2 years of the deal, which would probably happen, then it becomes about $68 million for 4 years. The injury problems aren't John Dorsey's fault, but the deal is looking right now like more of a problem, the workaround, than it is an advantage for this roster's makeup. But if you're now sitting in your car, despondent, staring out into the sky, saying, "Does anything matter?" Nobody but the Patriots gets every deal right. So how do you fix this problem? You can't just not pay anybody big contracts. You can't let Eric Berry walk and Justin Houston walk and Eric Fisher walk and Travis Kelce walk because you're afraid of giving too much money to Tom Bahali. That fear cannot poison your good deals. Cannot let you let your superstars walk away too soon. Even the Patriots have done that. Here's how you get around it. Here's how you can work within the system and still come out on top. And if you've been listening to this show for more than just today, if you've listened to this show for the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 5 weeks, whatever, you might be able to guess how you fix this. Value at the quarterback position. You got a couple of quarterbacks on rookie deals. You've got like $20 million of an advantage on Washington. Washington's going to have $25 million invested in Kirk Cousins. You're going to have $20 million invested in Patrick Mahomes and Brad Kaya. So what that you gambled and lost on Justin Houston's deal. You had to give it a shot. So what that you're paying Eric Berry as a top-paid safety in football? You have that space to work with. And if you get more of those right than you get wrong, all of a sudden you're building a contender as long as your quarterback can be above average at a good value. I know I beat the quarterback value thing like a dead, dying, decomposing zombie horse. I know I'm beating it to death and then past it. But it's because I don't feel like anyone else is on this dead horse. I feel like that's what so many of us as Chiefs fans, because I'm definitely in that group, need to understand and need to really get wed to here. We don't need the team to end up getting perfect Aaron Rodgers out of the first round. We need, like, Teddy Bridgewater value before he got hurt. Teddy Bridgewater's production on that rookie contract, it's good enough. All right, Charlie told me we need to take a break, and Charlie is in charge of me. So whenever we come back, we'll wrap up the Chiefs talk, and then we'll do something else. Maybe we do some science at the beginning of the 11 o'clock hour. Charlie, completely unprepared. This is Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
I have a millennial-sized attention span.
On Sports Radio 810.
Because there's still a naked baby on the microphone across from me.
WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday. That's me. Not diagnosed with the attention deficit disorder. Just have a... effectively have it. I don't know why that is. I feel like I used to be able to focus better. I feel like I'm getting worse with age. And that is, you know, they always say, it's all downhill from 22. So, I'm going to be bouncing off of walls by the quarter century mark. There was a really fun, kind of ridiculous NFL story going around the last few days that's never going to happen, and it ended up being like some reckless reporting from Ian Rappaport, but I really like it and I want to talk about it. I think it makes, if not a good actual story, a really fun fake news story. Ian Rappaport floated this idea of a trade involving Kirk Cousins going to San Francisco, Tony Romo going to Washington, and Washington getting draft picks and stuff. And like I said, in the last few days, it seems like this doesn't have many legs. Much legs? Doesn't have legs at all? But I think it brings up two interesting points here. One smaller point is that the NFL seems totally absent of the sign-in trade, or even like the idea of trying to trade a guy as a rental, like we see in the NBA all the time. Like, why don't more teams franchise tag guys and then try to trade them for like a fourth round pick? With the Chiefs, I wondered if they couldn't have franchise tagged Dontari Poe and then traded him for like a second. Now, one thing that limits that a little bit is the compensatory pick setup. The Chiefs are going to almost certainly end up with a third-round compensatory pick after Dontari Poe signs elsewhere. But it just doesn't happen in the NFL. I think that's kind of interesting. I used to think it was because draft picks were overvalued. But this year, my view on draft picks has changed as I've become more and more obsessed with the idea of financial value and giving yourself cap flexibility. So you can underspend on quarterbacks and maybe... You load up on earlier round picks and you can build a cheap secondary so you can afford to go spend on Alshon Jeffrey if that's where you think it's important, or DeSean Jackson, etc. That's the larger point, again, is value. I'm going to read this trade again and you tell me where you think one team is getting the short end of the stick. Kirk Cousins to San Francisco, Tony Romo to Washington, Washington, draft picks. I think the inclination there is to say, oh, well, San Francisco got the best end of the deal because they're getting a young quarterback who's good. Washington is getting nothing but draft picks. It's Dallas. Dallas is getting draft picks. I've screwed this up three times now. Dallas is getting a bunch of draft picks. Romo's going to Washington. I don't know how I misread that so many times. I'm bad at radio and roller skating. Dallas just can get assets to build up their team because they're building around Dak Prescott. The one thing that's interesting there is, would Tony Romo be traded in his own division? And what would that say about what the Cowboys think about Tony Romo? But I think San Francisco would be in a really difficult place to work with Kirk Cousins, because that team is so decrepit right now. So utterly empty of talent at this point. I think Kirk Cousins would go there, get a giant contract, and be miserable. And I don't, this is where I end up with Washington also. If Washington's going to give Kirk Cousins $25 million this year, the rest of that team is going to slowly fall apart. Already they're losing DeSean Jackson. So now it's Kirk Cousins throwing it to the corpse of Pierre Garçon and that one like rookie from last year who's really fast. Okay. Good luck. If you're going to give anybody $25 million, it better be Aaron Rodgers. And even Aaron Rodgers last year couldn't get it done. Last year, Aaron Rodgers wasn't getting that empty corpse of a team past the NFC Championship game. Kirk Cousins is never going to do that. Tony Romo at this point gives you maybe a chance, which is why I think the Romo Chiefs conversation was fun, but you guys all hated it, so we're not doing that anymore. We're doing rookies, which is great. I'm on board with that also. Draft two guys. I think the value conversation is so interesting, and I think we're going to see Washington sink into a sinkhole after they pay Kirk Cousins. I think we got one more year of the Raiders being really good, and they see how long they can keep everything afloat, keeping Derek Carr paid for a while out into the future. Like I said, the Colts already missed their window because Andrew Luck has not become Aaron Rodgers yet. So bring me Pat Mahomes. Bring me Brad Kaya. Bring me cheap quarterbacks. Bring me two playoff wins in a row. That's all I want. This is Sports Sunday.
And that's going to do it for this episode of the Rough and the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio at arrowheadaddict.com. I'm Joshua Briscoe. You can follow me on Twitter at JBBriscoe. Send your questions, your concerns, your thoughts, your comments, anything you may want to have. If you want to talk Chiefs, you can do it on Twitter or on the Rough and the Kicker Facebook page at facebook.com/RTK show if you have a more long-form question. As always, you can get the rest of Sports Sunday on 810WHB.com. Go to additional programming in the podcast sections, and you will find all 3 hours, which will include all the Chiefs talk that you've heard here today, plus talking about Big 12 basketball and my inability to roller skate. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you'll tune in live and even call into the show on Sunday mornings from 9 to noon at 913-3810-810, and we can talk in person if you've got a question you'd really like to get off of your chest. Thank you again to the Patreon supporters who helped keep this show up and running. Be back next week, same time. And once again, if you have any specific Chiefs breakdowns you'd like to get from me, I'd be happy to give them to you. Talk to you next week. Bye, Mom.